This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach Glenn, Coach Jen in California.
And I'm Alice Steinkey from Bluffdale, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode for Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 20th, episode 1547, brought to you by the NATRC. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Welcome back, Alice.
Good morning. How's it going in Florida?
Florida is fantastic. Autumn has finally arrived. How about you?
No. Well, autumn was supposed to have arrived at 2 a.m. According to the weatherman, they said expect rain overnight, most of it hitting the bulk of the area at 2 a.m. with lots of rain and wind and blah, blah, blah. It's still sunny and warm outside.
Oh, they missed the mark.
Yeah. So I guess I guess I'm going to have to wait a little while for autumn.
Wait a little while for autumn. Well, speaking of waiting, you are not waiting because I saw a post on somebody's Facebook page about going to go and pick up a horse. Explain.
Oh, well, I have been, ever since I bought Michael his Tennessee Walker.
Now tell everybody who Michael is.
Michael's my fiance, and we are getting married soon, but, you know, that's for us to know and everybody else to find out later. And I bought him a horse for his birthday, which I gave it to him early because it just the way it worked out. But ever since I bought him his Tennessee Walker, and then I've been riding my friend Teresa's Pasafinos, I've just really been jealous every time I watch somebody on a gated horse. And I sort of put out some feelers and I said, hey, I'm looking for a gated horse. I think I'd like a Pasafino. You know, what do you guys have? And because there's a lot of evidently like Arabs that a lot of them end up in rescue. Excuse me, Patty. My dog is pestering my cat. So I just put out some feelers and I was contacted by a lady in Florida who had shipped a horse through her rescue to Texas. And it evidently isn't working out. And they're trying to avoid spending the money to ship him back to Florida.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So they said, you know, there's a lot of Pasafino people here in Texas. So, and it turns out the horse is really close to me. So they said, could you just go pick him up and see if he'll work for you? And I'm like, okay, so what do you guys want for the horse? And they're like, we want to not spend the money to ship him back to Florida. So I'm going to pick him up. And we'll see his, we don't know his real name, but we're going to pull, he's probably registered because they said he was a stallion until about 3 years ago. He's 11 now. And so we're going to try to figure out who he is and see if I can get his papers. But they call him, the rescue called him Diablo Hermoso, which is handsome devil.
Ooh.
So, and he's very cute. There's a little video of him in a show ring and I'm guessing it's from before he was rescued, maybe, because he's really dark gray in that picture. And the pictures I've seen, he's a lighter gray now. So he, but he's got a few things that need to be worked through, but it sounds like he just tries to test people out and then goes on for, you know, then goes on about his business once he figures out you can take care
of him. He's just asking who's the leader.
Yes.
And if you answer in the affirmative that you are the benign dictator, he's good with it.
Right. And it sounds like the stuff he does is pretty much stuff that my own horse has done in the past. And and my friend Teresa's horse that I ride does occasionally. And so hopefully it'll be pretty smooth sailing. And plus, I think because these guys are little, they don't freak me out. Like when my warm blood used to do some of these things, it would scare me. You know, he was 16, 2, 17 hands.
It's a long way down.
So, yeah. And, you know, when they're 14 hands and they start acting silly, it just doesn't worry me as much. And I just sort of take care of it. But that and, you know, good anxiety meds, that'll help you every time.
There
you
go.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. So that's what's going on in your life in the next 48 hours or so. Glenn, why don't you tell us what's coming up on today's show? Glenn, you have to turn your volume back up.
I'm not used to do it sitting in this seat. On today's NATRC show, we have Laurie from Blue Bonnet Horse Expo, Shannon with Horse Trails and Camping Across America, and Lynn on a gala and the inner equestrian. And did you notice, Alice, I avoided every last name because
you
gave us
yes.
the most complicated last names in the world today.
Except for Lynn. That was easy. Lynn Clifford. But the other
yeah,
two
but then I didn't want to feel like the other two were left out if I didn't use their last name. I couldn't pronounce them.
Well,
we have to give you. What I wanted to say is I also have a Daily Winnie, so include me in that package there, Jennifer. Matter of fact, can you do me first?
Sure. Here we go.
Well, my Daily Winnie goes out to Claire Kirsch, one of our auditors, who did her second NATRC ride of the year in the beautiful Talladega National Forest in Alabama. She did the same trail Saturday and Sunday, just under 17.7 miles each day. And she said, even though her horse Gambit conveniently forgot his manners and training in front of the judges, he was great the rest of the time, and she was very happy. Do you think they do that intentionally, by the way? They see a judge and they go, oh, I'm just going to act up now. But I'm going to be good the rest of the time.
It depends on the horse, because I know people and horses that have horrible rides except when they're in front of the judges. And when they see the judges, the horse is perfect. And then you get to the end of the ride and you're like, that horse was awful today. How did it win?
Claire's wishing she had one of those horses right now, I think.
I wish I did too.
Yeah. Maybe some horses.
Yeah, but if you think about it. To win, you want it that way. But if you think about it, you're most of the time not in front of the judges. So if you're going to have one that's acting up the whole rest of the time, you've got that's a long day ahead of you,
yeah.
right?
That's very true. That's very true.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah, I don't...
there's a lot of trees you can hit between judges, too. So,
yeah,
you know.
That's true. And poor Michael can tell you about that because his horse, Sherman, looks for those trees and he's gotten brushed off a couple times. We're working on that.
All right, Alice, your turn.
All right. Well, I have a Daily Winnie to my good friend, Alana Summer. She drove to Colorado on Monday and drove back from Colorado on Tuesday to bring our friend, Kay Gunkel. She is a judge for NATRC, brought her horse to me in Texas so that I could ride her this weekend. Not Kay, the horse, Emma, this weekend in competition. Her horse needs 11 more points to get her national championship. And but Kay is a vet judge and has to be in Missouri this weekend to judge another ride. And if she's going to the last ride of the season, but if she didn't place first or second, she might not get all 11 points. And then she'd be like 1 point short for this award. And that would just be awful. So Alana drove to Colorado and back to bring this horse so that our friend could get this, hopefully win this award. So I just, you know, that's one of the reasons I like this sport so much is that people do stuff like this for each other. I mean, you know, 15 hours one day, 15 hours the next
that's
day, working nuts. Every other day in between. So
that's just nuts. Wow.
But we all, you know, we all try to help each other succeed. And that's one of the things that I really love about our sport.
See, I'm so selfish. You make me feel inadequate. Thanks a lot. There we go, because it's Alice's birthday tomorrow. Woo-hoo!
Tomorrow, woohoo! Yes, another year has gone by.
You got special things planned?
Going to a competition.
Really?
That's what, you know, the horse has been brought here from Colorado for me to ride.
Now, how far away is the competition you're going to?
Oh, it's only about 70 miles away.
Oh,
so easy. It'll take me a couple hours to get there because I have to drive through the town where my daughter lives and pick up her horse because she's getting to go too. So I get to spend the weekend with my daughter, which I don't get to do very often anymore now that she's in college and working almost full time. So it'll be a good weekend.
Cool. Now, with the NATRC, you are riding a friend's horse.
Yes.
So hopefully, provided that you don't mess up your job.
The horse
can get the points he needs for the end of the year. Are points always assigned to the same horse regardless of the rider? How's that work?
Okay. The point system is it's a sliding scale. So when you have a full class of people, like if there were six people in our class, the horse that's first gets 16 points for first place, and the horse that's sixth would get 6 points. And then like if there's only two riders, you know, the first place horse gets 8 points and the second place horse gets 6 points. So it's a sliding scale. You know, the fewer horses in the class, the fewer points you get.
Right. Okay. And that's really cool about how they slide the scale in the points so that, you know, in some competitive arenas where the points are standardized, you can go to all the teensy weensy shows where there's only three people in your class.
Right.
And beat out people who have gone to the same number of shows with big people in the class, and it's very different. So that's kind of cool how they do that. And speaking of points and pointers, we've got our first guest with us here now. Lori Oler King is here to chat with us about the Blue Bonnet Horse Expo. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the Blue Bonnet Horse Expo.
Well, the Blue Bonnet Horse Expo is an entire day. It has held of horsey activities and education. It's held at the Travis County Expo Center in Austin. It's off of 290 on Decker Lane. And the event centers around Blue Bonnet Equine Humane Society and our horses that we are looking to find forever homes for.
And what types of horses do you guys typically see in the Blue Bonnet Horse Rescue?
Everything. We see everything from minis to drafts. We see every breed and horses that have come from every discipline in life. So there's no standard horse that comes in through the rescue, which is what's so exciting about the expo. We have 40 to 50 of our adoptable horses there. And the most exciting part of the expo most years is our training challenge. For 4 months prior to the expo, we have professional trainers as well as qualified foster homes that train these horses so that they're better equipped, better trained to find their forever homes. And anyone who comes to the expo can watch them compete in trail class and in confirmation class and in a freestyle for finals to see what these horses can do and what kind of training they had. So when you think of rescue horses, our Blue Bonnet Expo really brings a different level of horse to that mindset. So folks who might think that rescue horses are all skinny and scrawny and not well-trained would have a different think when they saw our horses there at the expo.
So that's pretty interesting. So does the training challenge encompasses a lot of different disciplines?
It does. There are no requirements as to which type of equipment or which type of disciplines you train your horse. We ask you to, the trainers, to take their horses and do what they do best. So we will have individuals riding horses that have been trained in English disciplines and Western disciplines, some that have been cross-trained. Many, many of them, regardless of the chosen discipline, have also trained their horses out on the trail. I find that really interesting that they see trail training as a nice complement to any discipline with which they're training their horses. So you'll find a wide variety, not only of horses, colors, types, breeds, but now also training through the training challenge.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And when is this coming up? If you said,
I'd say October 22nd, this coming Saturday. And again, it is at the Travis County Expo Center. It is all day. From 9 a.m., we'll open the doors, and we'll be there till 7 p.m. till we crown the winner for the training challenge. And in between there, we have three different educational venues where we have professional clinicians in to provide training and education for our attendees. And so even if you're not in the market to adopt a horse, if you just want a great day of learning, we have topics, everything from dressage to reining, to basic horsemanship, And then education on health and the well-being of your horse. We have professionals on nutrition, as well as different alternative veterinary therapies. So there's just something for everyone.
So if people want to adopt a horse from the expo, what do they need to do to get set up to do that?
To get set up to adopt a horse, the first thing a potential adopter would need to do would be to go to our website, bluebonnetequine.org, and download an adoption application. In that application, there are some required photographs of your intended housing facility, where you're going to keep the horse. And if they could bring that completed application along with those required photos to the expo, they would then be eligible, pending inspection, to find a horse and put in their request to adopt it. So it's really a fairly simple process. We do want to ensure the horses go to a safe location and that folks are equipped to care for them, but the process is fairly straightforward.
And what do the average adoption fees tend to be?
Average adoption fees, I'm glad you asked that, because typically our adoption fees are very reasonable. Rarely is a horse's adoption fee over $750. That would be an upper end, and that is for horses that have been in the rescue and have had training. Those fees really just go to cover our expenses for veterinary care and feeding and any training that we have paid for. But at the expo, the adoption fees are 50% off. So if a horse is $750, then the adoption fee would be half that during the expo.
Okay, well that's a good deal.
Having a sale at the expo, woohoo!
Yes, and also by way of mention, also any other fees are 50% off. So if someone was interested in joining the rescue or being a part of us as our volunteer organization, memberships are also half price at the expo.
Well, and what's really cool about being a member of Bluebonnet, like I'm set up with Bluebonnet that every year it just automatically gets billed to me through PayPal. So I never have to remember whether or not I've joined for the year. I get a little notice that says my membership has renewed and boom, there it is. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice too. Are there any restrictions on the states that the horses can go to? I mean, I know that Bluebonnet, you know, is based in Texas, but you don't have to live in Texas to adopt a Bluebonnet horse. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. You can live in any state. We do obviously just need to know where the horse is, and we will. We have some follow-up requirements, but they're typically a self-inspection. And we have horses all over. We have horses in Colorado. We have horses in Arkansas and in other states. And so, no, you do not have to be a Texas resident to adopt or even to be a volunteer for Bluebonnet. There are lots of ways that you can get involved in help that don't require living in the state of Texas.
How cool.
See, Jen, you could volunteer too. You could adopt a trail horse from the expo so that I forgot your horse's. I lost his name.
Nigel.
Nigel, I was going to call him Beaker, and I'm like, that's not right. He's not Beaker. He's going through my Muppets. I was going through all my Muppets. So
Beaker lives down the street now, yeah.
Yeah, right. So you
cool
could get yourself a Fozzie or something.
A Fozzie? Oh, would not a Fozzie be cool?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody with a seriously fuzzy face and long whiskers. Oh, don't do this to me. Thank you so much.
The next time we get a horse in the rescue, we need to name it Fozzie, and that way Jen will know it's hers.
It's hers. Well, and it's interesting that you mention appearance, because all of the available horses that we have for adoption are available to view on our website. Again, that's bluebonnetequine.org, and if you go to the Meet the Horses tab, then you can look through all of the horses. We have them. You can search by a lot of different criteria, basically availability, what type of training they have, breed, even color. And so if someone's interested in browsing through the horses, they can do so online.
So, and if you get approved for adoption, you you can also be a foster home if, you know, perhaps you're not ready to adopt, but you have room in your stable for a foster, because, you know, unfortunately, there's always horses coming through that need places to land.
It's a really good point, Alice, that all of our horses are housed in individual private foster homes until they are adopted into their forever homes, which means we don't have a big facility. We don't have staff who maintains that. We rely on the generosity of our foster homes to care for these horses while they are in foster care. So anybody who's interested, that's a great way to help and get involved, even if you're not ready to adopt on your own.
Okay, so tell us again all of the details so everybody that was only half listening at the beginning can write it down.
You bet. It is the Bluebonnet Horse Expo. It is this Saturday, October 22nd at the Travis County Expo Center, and that's just outside Austin, Texas, off of Highway 290, and we'll be there from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., and it's a great day of education. We have clinicians and the training challenge. There's also great shopping opportunities. We have vendors. We have auction, live and silent. We have an art sale as well as a used tack and horse equipment area. So just a little bit of something for everybody. And one other quick thing, one new thing we have this year is our hospitality paddock. It's available from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. that day. And there'll be members from all over the state manning it. So if you're interested in becoming a member or just learning more about it, we'll have some folks you can maybe connect with from your area so that you, if you do decide to become a member, want to help, you'll have folks with you that you've already met and have put a face with names. And so that will really help some new folks that want to come in and get involved to feel connected right away.
Well, I know I've always unfortunately missed the expo because it seems like it's always the same weekend as one of our NATRC rides. But I think I've decided that next year I'm going to try to do the training challenge. And
that would be so cool, Alice, yeah, so we can follow your progress on the show.
Next year I thought about that. Next year I'm going to do it. And I'm already excited about it. And I can't even get a horse till next June. So.
And I would encourage you to do it. I did it several years ago before I took over managing the talent and clinic acquisition that I have for the last 5 years. And it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever done to have that little horse for those few months and to be able to make a difference in his life. And he did get adopted, and he is still in his forever home.
So how many of the people that enter the training expo or the training challenge end up keeping their horses? How many of them end up being adoption failures? Or foster failures.
Actually, it's relatively low. It honestly, especially in the professional division, it's relatively low.
Right.
In the foster divisions, it's relatively high.
No surprise.
Well, but it's not a failure if they get adopted. I was just curious if, because I'm thinking that after you spend 4 or 5 months with this horse,
yes,
it's probably hard to let it go unless you just meet somebody that you know is the right person.
We have one individual that's competed. She does compete in the professional division, but she's at one of our traditional foster homes, and she has done it almost every year for 5 years. And every year, although she is in love, that horse has found a forever home with a perfect adopter. And she said it hurts the heartstrings a little, but it's so rewarding to watch all your love and effort that's gone into that horse come to fruition as that horse finds its forever home.
But see, then I know somebody else who enters the training challenge and has like 3 or 4 adopted horses from the training challenge.
You know, that pendulum can swing both ways.
I know.
Hey, I have a quick question before we let you go here, Lori, this morning, because this is all fascinating. If there are other people listening to the show who are involved with their local rehoming and adoption group that helps horses find new homes, would you folks be willing to chat with their folks and talk about how you put this whole thing together? Because the idea of bringing in local responsible volunteers to help the horses develop skills that make them more adoptable and better useful citizens in the equestrian world is just, it's huge, because part of the problem with the whole unwanted horse is he has no skill set to be a safe and useful member of a family. And then the other part is, okay, how do you get those skills to a horse? And then how do you find people looking for a horse that has skills? Would you be willing to talk to some folks and say, hey, this is how we put it together. You should give it a try too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we work with law enforcement, we work with other rescues, we even work with non-equine rescues, because oftentimes when we are on site, that if there's horses in need, there are often dogs in need or cats in need. And so, you know, we're always open to helping the rescue community at large be better equipped to help all of our charges be able to find those forever homes. So absolutely. You know, whatever we've learned, this is our 10th anniversary for the Bluebonnet Horse Expo. So we've been doing it a good while and have learned a vast amount in how to and how not to put on an event like this. And so it has grown substantially over the years, and so I think we certainly would have some worthwhile information for anybody interested in putting on an event like this, or in just being able to find ways to improve the horses' training so they can just go on to find forever homes with or without an event.
Well, thank you very much, Lori Oler-King, for stopping by the show with us this morning with Bluebonnet Equine. And good work for you. And everybody go on out there and attend the Bluebonnet Horse Expo. And if you're not nearby that you can go and attend, check out the website, get involved, or get involved with your local rehoming group. And thanks again for stopping by the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Lori.
So that was fascinating stuff. It's always interesting to see and hear how different adoption agencies work and the inner workings of them and how some of them are so much more successful than others. And we had talked earlier in the show about you getting a new horse. And isn't that one coming from an adoption group?
Yes, it is coming from a rescue organization in Florida called Pro Paso US Network.
Really?
And and the lady that runs that rescue, her name is Carmen Micheletti. And I hope I said her name right. I know her name's Carmen. I got that part.
Thanks, Carmen.
I think she finds the Pasos in the kill pens, or they find horses that are being surrendered and pick them up and rehab them. They have a Facebook page that's Pro Paso, P-R-O-P-A-S-O, U.S. Network. And it's a public group where you can, look and see horses that are coming through their group. But, like the lady that I'm picking him up from, is picking Hermoso up from, it just happened to be here in North Texas, and she had him shipped here, and then it just didn't work out. But I've had really good luck with rescues. I've a foster home for Bluebonnet periodically, and my daughter's horse that she rides came from Bluebonnet. So I'm a big fan of trying to find a rescue if at all possible.
That's pretty cool. So, if you've got it in your skill set, you have to have a certain skill set, and you have to be willing to do that, because you don't often get to know them till after they're officially yours. So it's kind of cool that you're doing
right.
That. Yeah. And speaking of skill sets, our next guest, Horse Trails and Camping Across America, LLC. I'm really curious about that. So why don't you introduce us to Shannon?
All right. Our next guest is Shannon. Let's see if I get this right. Schraufnagel. Did I say it right?
Well done. Yes, you did.
Awesome. So I was thinking that must be a German name.
Yes, it is. I was married into it. I am very Irish, but my husband is very German. So
yes, I saw your picture. You didn't look real German.
No.
But she lives in Wisconsin, so you're a little Norwegian thrown in there too, so maybe.
Yes. My family is my dad's side is all Irish, and then my mom's side has some Dutch and a little bit of German and some English in there. So she's kind of mixed on that side. But I claim the Irish side. So,
all right. Well, Shannon is the head of Horse Trails and Camping Across America, LLC. And there's a Facebook page, our Facebook group with the same name. I guess it's just the page is LLC and the group is just Horse Trails Across America. So first of all, greetings. And how did this all come into being?
Yeah, it was totally by accident. So my husband and I, we both grew up in horses, and that's kind of how we met. And so we've been trail riding most of our life. And one day I just decided, I was tired of trying to find different places to travel to on the internet. It was very hard to, really know where you were going to trail ride. And as all of us know, you can find a place on the internet and they can say they're the best in the Rockies, but when you get there, they might not be. And once you're there, you can't really pack up and find somewhere else to go. So I thought, I'll just create a group on Facebook. I was just bored. and I thought maybe I'd meet some other trail riders across the country. And, I really like being able to see photos, from the trails from other people. So I thought, well, I'll just create a group and see what happens. I had no idea how many other people in the entire country also had the same desire, and grew very, very fast. I think we hit about 500 within just the first 2 months. And then from there, we have pretty much doubled every year. So now we are actually today, we're going to just hit 55,000 members from across the country. So yeah, it completely avalanched. I had no clue it was going to turn into this. I had no clue that this would overtake my life. It was a very welcome surprise. It's been an awesome ride, and we're really just getting started. So it's been pretty awesome to see where it's going and all the new members we bring on every day. So,
well, I was just turning to your page to look, and the very first post that's at the page right now is actually someone that I've been friends with on Facebook and in person for years.
Cool.
And it said, good places to ride in Texas. And I haven't seen her in a while, but we still keep up with each other. So that's kind of funny. But I wish there had been Facebook when I was younger, or when I would move to Texas, because I came here and didn't know anyone. And the internet was still, that was 16 years ago. The internet was mm-hmm. decent, but it was just hard to find places to go.
Yep. And that's the neat thing about this is we have so many people, and that's usually one of my favorite stories to hear about is people that are moving to a new area, and are just trying to find trails. And then usually they come on asking to find new trails. And then within 2 weeks, they have a whole new group of friends that they're riding with.
Right.
We have a ton of stories like that where, we've had groups of people that, hey, I'm from Michigan and I want to ride down in Arizona. Where are some good places? And we ended up having, 80 people on a ride, meet from all different states that, met down in Arizona because that one person asked that question. The networking and the community of HTCAA is really awesome. And that's what I personally love the most is seeing how many people are connecting out there all over the country in different places. So it's very fun to see.
That's pretty cool. So I'm curious, I know there's probably all types and levels of facilities, but I was thinking about Glenn and his desire to never camp in anything less nice than a Hilton. And I wondered if you had any place that you could recommend that Jen could probably talk Glenn into going, Jen could go ride, but then there'd be someplace nice for Glenn to stay.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot. That's a great question that, you guys could even ask on the page. It's always kind of fun to do when people are not familiar with HTCAA, kind of do a test, just jump on there and ask a question and you'll get more answers than you can imagine. But probably one of my favorites that I haven't even been to yet myself, but I would love to go is Leatherwood Mountain Resort. And that's in Blue Ridge Mountains, North Carolina. And they have beautiful cabins, beautiful facilities. They're called cabins, but they're really, large, beautiful log homes. You're sitting in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's a beautiful setting. The trails I heard were just fantastic. So I hear a lot of great things about that. But, the more you look, the more you find. You can, it's amazing how many places are out there. Yes, it's beautiful.
That sounds like a good place for a honeymoon.
Oh,
yes, for Alice, right?
Right. Or an anniversary trip for, Glenn and Jen, celebrate all these years of marital bliss.
Yes, exactly.
So are the trails
Well, the neat thing about... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that the neat thing about locations like that, my husband and I do mostly primitive camping, but that's one of the things. Usually once or twice a year, we like to kind of go out and splurge for a week and find a place where we can put the horses in a stall. And if we want to travel and do some tourist stuff, we can do that. And that's the neat thing about something like Leatherwood. You can get out on the trails, you can ride for a day, but if you want to put your horse in a stall for a day, you're right in the Blue Ridge Mountains and you can go and do the touristy stuff and hang out and have fun. And, so it's nice, especially if you do have that kind of, relationship with someone else that doesn't want to tent it like the other one might want to. There's just a lot of neat locations like that, throughout the country. And that's the cool thing again about HTCAA. There's so many locations and I see it every day. People go, I had no idea this place existed, even in someone their own state, and they're like, I didn't know this campground was there, this resort was there, whatever. So we have a lot of resources in the trail riding world for all sorts of different desires and likes. So
Okay, so name us a place that has horse trails, riding trails, and driving trails.
You know, it's harder to find just because it's not as popular. I think it is becoming more popular. But I know there's a couple locations in Indiana that seems to be a little bit more popular than most. And I am spacing the name, but
is it Brown County?
Hoosier National Park. Yep, I think it's
Brown
down right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
I lived in that part of the country and never rode there.
Oh, okay.
It's like I lived there for 10 years and it was only 2 or 3 hours away. But at the time, that was a long way to go for trail riding. I mean, at the time, I always joke about my amateur trail riding days and it was like, oh man, that's so far.
Oh, yeah.
And now.
Yes, exactly.
Right. But yeah, Brown County has some pretty. And I'll bet German Ridge might also have some trails that would be wide enough because I've ridden some of those trails and those trails are pretty wide.
Sure. Yep, so, there you go. So, and I did just see one yesterday that was up in Maine, actually, and they had some pretty neat photos from that, too. I didn't catch the name of it, but they're out there. And again, that's the helpful thing about HTCAA. We do, and that's usually when I see those kind of things pop up, somebody saying, you know, I really want to be able to drive, and, you know, where do people suggest to go? Again, they are a little bit harder and, you know, a few between to find. But if you ask, you'll get answers, so.
There you go. So you had said something to me when we chatted the other day about having people that are retired or just, you know, independently wealthy that take their horses and travel everywhere and live out of their trailers and kind of travel permanently or, you know, semi-permanently. Do you have any good stories about people that get to do that and like different routes they've taken?
Oh man, one of my favorites, and she just happens to be a dear friend of mine, but I also met her through HTCAA, and it's Leanne and Bob Piggott. And it's just kind of a cool story because, again, it reflects HTCAA and the horizons that it's opened for many people. But her and her husband were going to retire about two or three years ago. And about that time, we had just started to get to know each other on HTCAA, and she had told me that they were, you know, really wanting to start to travel. They were going to sell off their beautiful property that they lived at back in Ohio and sell all their belongings and pack up in their living quarters trailer and start to travel. So in 2015 was their first year that they were going to start doing it kind of full time and testing the water, so to speak. So they started off a tour from the east, and in the midst of their tour, they decided to stop off at our HTCAA gathering in the Black Hills of South Dakota at Broken Arrow Horse Camp. And she got to know the owners there, and they were sweet owners. It was a different owner last year, Jerry and Sue, and told them kind of, you know, what their plans were and being on the road full time. But they also knew, you know, it is expensive to do that. So, you know, you can't just keep traveling from week to week. You've got to find places you can stay for at least a few weeks at a time to kind of, you know, reserve the expenses. So he said that they were looking for a camp host and hostess. So offered for them to come back next year, which would have been the summer, and be able to stay at Broken Arrow throughout the summer. Get paid for it. And then also, you know, in return, they're saving money up for, you know, for traveling the rest of the year. So it was a very cool thing because through HTCAA, she made that connection and they were the camp host and hostess of Broken Arrow this year when we returned for our second gathering. And it was awesome because she has met hundreds of HTCAA members that have been coming through the Black Hills. And she has so many stories of people, you know, just traveling from all over the country. And, but in between that, they were doing all the traveling. You know, they hit Tennessee, they hit Florida, Kentucky, Nebraska, and then they made their way out west into Montana. And currently they are headed to Arizona this week where they're going to kind of tour around out there for the winter. And then they're going to head back to Broken Arrow in the spring. So just another neat connection through HTCAA in seeing people that, you know, really do this for a living. So I'm always quite jealous of Leanne and Bob.
Oh man, that sounds like I always like hear what people are doing. It's like, that's the kind of thing I'd like to do when I grow up, be able to go, ride like that. And my fiance would like it too. 'Cause he says, you know, he just likes to go ride. He just likes to be on a horse. He just likes to ride.
Yeah.
And that would be right up our alley.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's very neat. We have a lot of neat stories like that. We have, I am in awe of some of the ladies that have gone out by themselves across the country. One in particular, Pat French. I won't mention her name, but she's definitely well past the age of retirement. She just picks up and travels across the country with her horses, and I think she's got two cats now, and a dog, and she just goes from one place to the next. She doesn't know where she's going to be from one month to the next, and she's Pat French is the lady I want to be when I grow up, because she she's awesome. Absolutely love her. Just true blue, you know, cowgirl at heart. And she's just out there by herself, and she has no problem just packing up and moving to the next campground. So it's very cool.
That's just so cool how you've created a community where people can share information, and for some, they're really discovering how they can take the idea of hanging around and being on the road with your horse and your family. They can take that and tweak it a little bit and really make it suit them personally. So give us the name of the website and the Facebook page one more time before we let you go.
Yeah. So right now we're just on Facebook. So you can find us on there. You have to type it all out because Facebook doesn't do acronyms. So don't look for HTCAA because you won't find it. It's Horse Trails and, which would be the and sign, Camping Across America. And you can find us there. And just if you're not a member already, just go ahead and send in a member request. We go through, in fact, right now, we had about 850 member requests this week, and we're trying to get through them all.
Wow.
Yeah, I have 14 people that help me. I should always mention my posse. I've got 14 people that help me run it 24/7. The biggest thing is going through the member requests, especially sometimes Facebook opens the floodgates and suddenly we can't keep up with the requests. We go through them daily. So to get up to 850 means we have a lot coming in really fast.
Be patient, folks. Be patient, because she goes and checks every single one to keep the crap out.
We do.
You keep the crap out.
Absolutely. So usually for about one, every member that we accept, we're denying probably three or four. We specifically go through each of those requests. But anyways, you can find us there, Horse Trails and Camping Across America. We are working on a website. That's a whole other story, because that's a whole other animal. And that got me into a journey I never imagined. And I'm learning curve every single day.
There you go. Well, thanks.
But eventually we'll have that.
Thanks
right
again.
Right now you can find us on Facebook.
Shannon
Absolutely.
Schroff-Nagel for stopping by on the show this morning. And we'll revisit with you periodically, because this really is a fascinating topic, and it has obviously struck a chord with folks all across America. That's such fascinating stuff, camping and horses and camping. And with 50,000 members, it's obviously that there's something going on there. There's a reason there are so many living quarters horse trailers trotting around out there.
Well, and I can't tell you enough how much you need one of them. And my old horse trailer, the one that had the partial living quarters, it's still for sale.
Oh, it's still available.
Yeah, it's still available. I think the lack of bathroom has held a few people off, but it's got lots of room to sleep. You know, it's almost big enough for a scooter to hop up in the living quarters. You know,
he would probably like that, because he said he wants himself a memory foam mattress.
Well, you know, and my colt, my 3-year-old, whenever I'm out there working, I have to close the door because he'd load himself in there if he was given a chance.
Walk right in. So. Oh my gosh, that's a hoot.
But
that's just a hoot. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, folks, and we're going to listen to our song of the day. So everybody has a pee break, because that's what we do here on Horses in the Morning. So we're going to enjoy some Rescue Husband Blues, considering our first guest of the day. This is by Spencer Williams. We'll be right back with our next guest, Lynn Clifford.
Well, I knew I was in trouble when my wife saw this old horse. He's a pathetic thing, and she said, we've just got to take him home. Know that we can feed him up and get him back on his feet. Next thing I know, there's 14 more in my wife's rescue lead. Suddenly, she's getting 15,000 emails a day. Most of them from people trying to send another horse.
horse our way. A few times I tried to put the brakes on, but it was just too late. She'd hypnotized 14 other wives all across the state. Well, I guess there's worse obsessions that my darling wife could choose. But that sure don't stop me from having the rescue husband blues. We fostered 1,000 horses, most whose names I can't recall. But at least I know a little piece of my wallet went out with them all. Now my wife loves the horses, and I've just had to accept that. Having a little more trouble with these 40 dogs and cats. Everything was fine until they commandeered my chair. Covered every piece of clothing I own with piles and mounds of hair. Next thing you know, I'm gonna be renting another house. Cause the animals will unionize and quickly vote me out. I'd like to think my wife will side with me when that day comes. But I don't know, she's got little ears for creatures with opposable thumbs. I guess there's worse obsessions that my darling wife could choose. That sure don't stop me from having the rescue husband blues. We fostered 1,000 horses, most whose names I can't recall. But at least I know a little piece of my wallet went out with them all. Now I know some of you fellas out there can surely sympathize. Same thing's been going on at your house and with your darling wives. So let's start us up a club. Let the meeting start. Cause there's a whole lot of Shinerbach beer in misery. Come on and do your part. We've got the rescue husband blues. Sure don't got no money left to lose. Let's get together and talk about the days before our wives are rescue slaves and drink away these old rescue husband blues. Just can't shake these rescue husband blues.
Well, here we are this morning on Horses in the Morning, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. We are here every third Thursday to talk about trail riding and all things trail. And Jen and I were just discussing trailers and trail riding. And now we are going to talk with Lynn Clifford, who is a life coach and also helps people with trail riding and all other types of equestrian pursuits. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, ladies. Nice to be here.
I saw your intro on your website, and I have to read it because it cracked me up. I liked all of your descriptions. It said, devoted agent of change, priestess of possibility, advocate for authenticity, third generation equestrian, healer, healing, writer, author, poet, speaker, performer, free form dancer, highly sensitive human, wood sprite and tree lover, water waiter, moon gazer, earth layer, hot coal walker, and seeker of sacred balance. And that's quite an eclectic set of skills.
Absolutely. I didn't want to limit myself. You can add elephant rider in there too. I've actually ridden an elephant.
Cool. How about a camel or a llama?
Not yet.
Not yet.
On that one. That's on my bucket list.
So, I met Lynn at our North American Trail Ride Conference convention in Kansas City, I guess it was, about almost 3 years ago now.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and you talked to us then about overcoming fear, which is something a lot of riders have issues with. But I want to talk a little bit about that, but there's just so many things you do. I'm not sure we can fit it all in.
Let's focus on horses and trail riding today.
Absolutely.
All those guys. Yeah,
well, first off, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your educational background because I'm a music therapist by occupation, and I saw that you have your master's in expressive arts therapy. So I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was drawn to the program. I went to Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was drawn to that program because it was the only thing out there at the time that was introducing the idea of a third element in a healing relationship. So, you know, usually it's a dyad between a therapist or a coach or professional and someone who's coming for some help or support. And this opened up the world of, you know, using expression, music, art, movement, those kinds of things into the healing relationship. And really, as you know from your schooling, it lends so much perspective and just some really rich insights for people to be able to work with things in these alternative ways. And the reason specifically that I was looking for that kind of approach was because I was always secretly thinking to myself, horses. That was before the, as a third element, because that was before the equine assisted psychotherapy and equine assisted coaching programs really had started. So I was trying to find something where I could integrate my background with horses and a third element. And that was the closest I could find and still get a master's degree.
Yeah. And that's really cool. I mean, I didn't start writing myself until I was in grad school for music therapy. And then in the last few years, hearing about EGALA and the equine assisted therapy, my minors in psychology, I keep thinking I need to hook up with some people doing EGALA work. And I don't know, it's just so like hearing you speak a few years ago and then all the stuff you talked about and then using the horse, not just for riding, but as an assistant in therapy just really spoke to my heart.
Absolutely. Very powerful.
So how do you find, like, okay, when you work with a lot of people who don't have any equine experience at all.
That's true. I have a pretty equal blend, actually, okay. Of equestrians and non-equestrians. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then how do you use some of these things to work with people out on the trail? And what can they take away from what you're doing that's different than what other people are doing in trail training?
I think the key thing that sets what I'm offering apart, and also I'm starting to see other people doing this too, which is wonderful, is addressing more of that internal landscape. You know, what's going on in your mind? What's going on in your body? And what's your story that you're telling yourself before you go to the barn or once you're out there on the trail? Those kinds of things. So a lot of times people come to me, equestrians come to me, if we speak about that population, they come to me to work through, they've either had an accident that might have been in the past or it might have been recent. They may have had a change in their body. Say, for example, I've worked with a couple women who've recently had children, and their whole body's changed, as well as their sense of their own mortality and having to care for another living being, you know. So there's these elements of things that are going on that start to influence them. They might normally have been very comfortable out on a trail ride with their horse, but then a little something happened that was either, or maybe a big something happened between them and their specific horse, or something happened that wasn't related directly to their horse, but it's still influencing them and their ability to really enjoy themselves and their horse and relax. So, those are some of the layers that we work with.
Well, and I personally can relate to that because my daughter's 19 now, but almost 19 years ago in December, I had gotten back on my horse about 8 times after having her. She was just over 3 months old. One of those beautiful winter days that, you know, that you get in the middle of the winter. I had a friend come over and I was riding the experienced horse and my friend was riding the green horse and my experienced horse spooked at the strawberry patch and bucked me off and stuck, you know, just this whole huge mess. I broke an arm. So here I had this tiny little infant and a badly broken shoulder and it took me years to get through that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I still think about it every December.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, it was, and it can be crippling.
Right. So. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's different, it speaks a little bit to, you know, there's different types of fear that people might be working with. Some can be from the past, like I was saying, some can be from the present, current things, like your horse is really hot when he goes out on the trail. You know, that's a current thing that's actually happening. And then there's also futurizing, you know, start telling stories about what might happen.
Right.
Even if it never has happened, or, you know, we saw it happen to somebody else, you know, or something like that. But where we really want to be careful is if it starts to take over your ride, because that's the part that, you know, takes the joy out of what we're doing, and also can sometimes influence to the level of safety. You know, if we're really focusing on what could go wrong, or maybe not focusing as much on what we can do to redirect our horse and redirect ourselves in a positive way.
So what are some of the exercises that you would do with riders to help them find their center? You know, like, do you take the person into the situation that's frightening, or do you, I mean, how do you work with it?
Right. How do you work with that? Right. Often I work with people. A lot of the coaching that I offer is actually via phone or Skype, or if the person lives close by, I will work with them in person. But sometimes, well, often I start off the horse. We just have a conversation about what may have happened, and, you know, when it happened and how it happened. And as long as that isn't re-traumatizing, sometimes there's people that are so kind of acute in the stage of fear that you need to be careful about that part. But often just being able to talk about it with somebody that understands and can relate and is a horse person themselves, that in and of itself can actually help quite a lot. But then we start to talk about you're really troubleshooting, creating an action plan, those kinds of things, and then taking things step by step by step to build confidence, skills, and abilities. And those things happen with the horse eventually. If I'm working with someone remotely, long distance, then I give them tools to try, or recommending to find a trainer to work with, that kind of thing. If they're here in person, then we can start working together with the, you know, with them and the horse. The three things I can offer people on the radio interview here today to take away just very, very simply is tracking, rating, and choosing. And those three things, I'll just do them very briefly, and people are welcome to contact me if they want more information about it or talk about things. Tracking is essentially noticing what's going on with your body and with your mind before you even get into the situation. So it's noticing, you know, how you're feeling, where you're going, how are you breathing? Are you breathing? You know, where is your breath? What's your pulse and your heart rate like? How are you holding your muscles? You know, that kind of thing. What are your thoughts? Those kinds of things. So that's tracking, or some people call that mindfulness. And that's something you practice all the time, but it's great to do around horses and trail riding specifically before you get yourself in a pickle. Now, rating, these things all work together, they're not separate into themselves. Rating is being able to evaluate a scenario or a sensation or a thought kind of on a, you can do it on a scale of 1 to 10 or a percentage, or you can even do red, yellow, and green zone. Green meaning go ahead, red means no way, yellow means maybe. You're trying to find out, you're identifying, okay, this thought that I keep having or this lack of oxygen I'm feeling right now because, oh my God, I'm holding my breath. You know, we're noticing that, like, how extreme is that? Like, is it really mild, or is it kind of in the middle, or is it extreme? The trick being here, you need to choose, which is the third thing. And choosing involves not waiting until it escalates to, you know, a red zone, essentially, or a 10 or something like that. And then you can choose, like, maybe I need to do some ground schooling first, or maybe I need to ask my other riders on the trail ride to just wait a minute before they leave this clearing, because I'm not quite ready yet, you know, or choose, like, hey, you know, this person I've been riding with, it really hasn't been working for me. We need to have a chat before we go out next time, or I need to choose a different buddy. You know, there's all sorts of possibilities.
Well, I was going to say, sometimes it's important who you choose to do these different rides with, because not every riding friend is suitable for every situation.
Nope. Absolutely. And setting yourself up for success is kind of one of the biggest things I could leave everybody with today, is just to say, like, take the time it takes to think about, process out, get help if you need to. What would be a setup for success, not only for you, but for your horse and for your partnership? And those things, that builds up solid foundation. And it's sometimes it's not a quick fix. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's simple, but sometimes it's not a quick fix. It takes some real dedication. And we get to look at how important is that to set you and your horse up for success, really making it a priority. Catch it early, catch it often. it's a big one.
So I have kind of an out there question for you.
Great.
And if you, okay. I mean, this is one of those you may want to, I don't know. It's just, I always have felt like I had exceptional skills at communicating with my animal, or not even my horse, but just other horses, like reading them or sensing their mood and what's going on inside of them. Do you find that people who work with you develop some of these skills? Or because, like, for example, we have a Pasafino here that came to us, not via a rescue. As far as we know, nothing bad is that. We don't know anything that ever happened to him. He just didn't do much. He was kind of left to his own devices because he scared his previous owner. Mm-hmm. And I had decided I was going to turn him into one of my trail horses. And I have since decided that he is just not emotionally equipped for that. And I know some people are like, oh, no, you just need to push through it. And then my friend that knows the Pasos are like, no, yeah, I think maybe he just needs to live in a ring. But I mean, do you ever find that people need to develop those skills of reading their horses? And I mean, I'm just curious if you ever, you know, how you feel about like communicating with your animal and what levels you find that people do that.
Yeah. That's a great question. And multifaceted indeed. You know, one of the biggest things that I love supporting for equestrians is, and human beings on the planet generally, is learning how to really listen to themselves, to really listen deeply to that, you know, that small, still voice inside. And that, developing that connection and that relationship with ourselves and trusting ourselves with that. I mean, sometimes it's great to get outside feedback and get different perspective and stuff like that, but really listening to ourselves and empowering ourselves instead of doing the like shoulds. You know, like, oh, you just got to get back on that horse and show him who's boss, you know?
Right.
Sometimes that's not appropriate. So, you know, listening to oneself and this directly, like tuning into oneself, that's part of that tracking, rating, and then choosing, which is where you're actually creating actions that support your confidence and build your confidence in yourself. Those things actually help you be more sensitive, I feel, it's my bias, and read, quote-unquote, others, including your horse, better.
Right.
So that, you know, that relationship, that exchange, it starts within us, and it also definitely translates to our horses. So, yes, I do feel like people get better at reading their horses when they're able to read themselves and really listen to that. And then the other piece I'll add, I love what you said about the intuition piece. So many people I've worked with, particularly women, they knew something wasn't right.
Yes.
Before they got in a crash. So many times. And I'm not saying you're always going to know. It's not a judgment thing. Like you should know, you know, like if something stuff happens. But, you know, there's so many women I've worked with who knew better. But they were with someone who was pushing them, or they had an old story from an old trainer or whatever, and then they end up in a big heap.
Well, like the day I came off 19 years ago, I had plans to go ride, and every person I planned to ride with fell through. And I kept calling friends and calling friends and calling friends till I found someone who would come ride with me. And then after I got hurt, I was like, ah, God was telling me not to ride today.
Yeah, you know. You felt like, oh man.
Yeah, and it was like, it was so obvious. It was, you know, it's like if you're an NCIS fan, it was like I got gib slapped. It's just like, oh yeah. That was a 3-month gib slap. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I would like for you to tell us where we can reach you. And I know that in the future, I look forward to being in touch with you because, there's so many things that you're doing that are things that I would like to do in my future.
I'd love to chat with you more about that. Yeah, and I welcome anybody that's heard the show that's curious to find out a little bit more. Is welcome just to give me a call or an email. That's absolutely fine. Just feel free to reach out. My website is my name. So it's www.lynnclifford, L-Y-N-N, and then Clifford, like the big red dog, .com. And my phone number is 505-231-5353. Now, welcome hearing from people.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're
Have
so
a great
welcome.
Day.
Thank you. Yeah, take care. Happy trails.
Bye-bye, Lynn.
Bye.
Fascinating stuff.
I was trying to get you to ask a question, and you never went away.
I was absorbing.
She is so cool. I mean, when I talked to her at the convention, and so it's been like, you know, I kept thinking, oh, I got to have her on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just think she's so interesting.
Well, and we can relate her conversation back to our conversation with our previous because becoming more self-aware and more in tune with what's going on inside of you and trying to peel away some of the external influences that sometimes cloud what's going on inside, we can discover things like, I've always wanted to go camping with my horse. We can discover things like one of the important aspects of my relationship with my horse is his past and bringing that past forward so he can have a brighter future. People who like to adopt horses versus someone who wants to have a horse with a relatively clean resume. So
right.
That, because a lot of people, you know, when you, everybody's relationship with their horse is a little bit different. Some people ride horses because they enjoy the competitive aspect of that relationship and they want to make that horse their business partner, so to speak.
Right.
Some people are more towards they enjoy the relationship because they want to have kind of zen time with their horses, and it's that aspect, and some people are somewhere in between. So kind of all makes sense.
And I know with the intuition part, I've had like my mare that I started in ATRC, I thought she was a really good trail horse, but I didn't really have a lot of reference points because mm-hmm. I hadn't done the serious trail riding. Then I came to realize that she was anxiety ridden, but didn't express it until one day she blew up. And then, you know, I had already bred her to have a baby at that point, and her baby was the same way. Put her in a ring. Like, now that horse is a therapeutic riding horse, and she loves her job. She likes the sameness. She likes the attention. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this Pasofino here, Smokey. When I ride him in the round pen, he's perfect. I can ride him up and down the driveway. He's fine. But if I stretch that cord just a little too far, he loses his mind. He just can't handle the stress of being away from his friends and even on the trail with his friends. It's just too much for him. Yeah. He's terrified. And it's all internal. You know, he's 20 years old. Maybe 10 years ago, we could have fixed it, you know, and maybe the right person could fix it now, but mostly we've just decided he's just isn't necessary.
He's happy being a homebody.
Exactly. And, you know, like Liberty, he actually kind of gets sad and kind of downtrodden when you can tell that he's going home. Like when you're out riding for fun, you know, like some horses get faster when you turn toward home.
Yes.
You can actually see him deflate when you go back.
You know, Scooter's the same way when we go out hacking around the neighborhood. We always blame it on him being tired, but that's not really what it is. When we go hacking around the neighborhood, it's a very easy ride. It's not like they work hard and he could get tired. But invariably, as we make the loop, and we start to come back towards our home, and it doesn't matter which loop it is. We have lots and lots of loopy trails. Nigel will walk a little faster because he's a homebody. Scooter invariably slows down.
Yeah.
Without fail. So, he always goes slower towards home. It's like, no, I like the adventure. It's fun. I want to see the whole neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. And I truly believe that some people aren't equipped to be with some horses. It's just, you know, whether the horse isn't athletic enough or the person is too emotional or the horse is too emotional. And I think, you know, working with Lynn could be really beneficial to people in helping them. Like when you have a horse and you're not sure of its relationship with you, might be very helpful in helping you figure out, you know, should I pass this one on or should I keep this one? And how do I need to alter myself?
And it's okay to break up with your horse.
It's okay, especially when the horse is going somewhere better.
Well, yeah, you got to have a good match. And sometimes sometimes the way to fix that is to become more comfortable with the type of relationship that horse needs. Some horses, you know, they need to have a business relationship. So that's where they're happy. And if you're a warm and fuzzy person, are you able to step back enough and make your relationship with that horse business-like and still enjoy it and still look forward to it? Or can't you? Well, if you can't, that's okay, because there's somebody else in the world who can be responsible with that horse who can, but you might have to put a little effort into finding them.
Exactly.
Yeah, there we go. Well, boy, that wrapped it up in a nice, neat little bow for the day, didn't it?
It did. It's been great in spite of some of the earlier challenges we had, it's turned out to be a great show.
It's a great show. And now, for folks who are curious about what goes on at the NATRC, where can they find more?
Okay, you can go to the NATRC.org.
And what will they find there?
They will find a list of the different rides left in this in the calendar year. And if you click on rides, you will also see a calendar that shows you or shows you a map that shows you all the different regions. And each of the regions also has their own website. So if you get to digging around NATRC.org, like there's a map for my region, which is Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana. And that's like NATRC, the number 4.org, you know, and there's NATRC5.org. That's for the East Coast. You know, so you can look at where you are and even look more in depth at your certain region. Okay, and just so people know, there is a competition this weekend in North Texas. If anybody is interested in finding out more about that, there is still room left in that competition. They can contact me or they can go to the NATRC4 website and get all the info they need to come volunteer. You can come see me. That would be awesome. That would be so cool if some of the listeners came to volunteer a ride. That would be awesome. I would love that. And then there's also a competition in Missouri this weekend near Fulton, Missouri, at a place called Cedar Creek. And I think there's one in California this weekend. And then 2 weeks from now is the last weekend of the ride season. And there'll be a ride in Oklahoma. And it seems like there's one somewhere else, but I didn't do my homework. I'm sorry. But then the week after that, we have our board meeting in Kansas City. And the board meetings are always open if people want to sit in. And we're going to be We'll be at a hotel near the airport in Kansas City. And again, if anybody is interested in just meeting the board members or listening to part of the board meeting, I mean, when I was a kid, I always thought that board meetings, my dad would say he had a board meeting and I was like, oh, it's a place you go to be bored. And that's not true for us because we actually do really interesting and fun things at our board meetings.
You can learn about the NATRC from the top down.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
Well, for everybody who wants to find us online and see what's going on in the show notes, because we put lots of links there, you can go to horsesinthemorning.com and you can also listen to the shows from there. And you can follow us on Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning on Facebook. We have a Twitter account. Our handle is Horse Radio. And you can have all of the shows with you wherever you go by downloading the free Horse Radio Network app for your Android or iPhone. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's a free app, and it's super easy to use. And it doesn't track where you go all the time. And, and if you're old school, you can subscribe via iTunes and never miss an episode. And thank you very much to Alice for hosting our show on the third Thursday of every month. And thank you very much to NATRC for supporting the show. We'll see you next month.